Okay. Well, hopefully you have a Bible in front of you, because now we're going to be reading from the Gospel according to John. And we're going to be looking at chapter 1, verses 1 to 5. If you have one of the Bibles at the back, it's on page 886. Otherwise, it's the fourth book of the New Testament. John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.
Well, good morning, everyone, and great to see you all. And you've come at a good time because, as John said, today is the beginning of our brand new series called Seeing God. That's what we're going to be doing, Seeing God. I don't know if you thought you could see God, but come along and see. And we're going to be working through the first three chapters of John's Gospel, and we'll be doing that for the next 9 weeks. So we're going to slow down a little bit, and we're going to really try and get our heads around John's Gospel. 9 weeks in the first three chapters. Let me pray, and then we're going to jump into this book together. Let me pray. Seeing God. Father, open our eyes. We want to see Jesus. Open our eyes, please. We don't want to see Jesus with these eyes, these physical ones, because they're unreliable. They're growing old. They're easily distracted. We want to see Jesus with the eyes of our heart. So help us to see. Show us your glory. May it be that when we've seen him, everything else will fade away. We will see the glory that is God in human flesh. Will you help us to see? We ask it by Jesus, through the Spirit, for your glory. Amen. Well, have a look at John's Gospel, and I do hope you have it in front of you. Look at that opening line. In the beginning was the Word. In the beginning was the Word. It's a very strange way to start a book. I'll give the game away. The whole book is about Jesus. This whole book is about Jesus. So why does it begin so strangely? In the beginning was the Word. There are four Gospels: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These three start off in a way that I can understand. Mark's Gospel, which, by the way, we'll be studying on Tuesday night at our search course, Mark's Gospel starts like this: the beginning of the good news about Jesus. I can understand that. That makes sense to me. Matthew's Gospel begins with Jesus' family tree, the genealogy of Jesus. Luke's Gospel begins with how Jesus was born, when it happened, and the angels, you know, we read it at Christmas. The angels came to Mary, etc., etc. I can understand that. But look at John again. In the beginning was the Word. Why does John begin like this? Why does John use that language? And particularly, look at it again. In the beginning was the Word. The Word there is obviously Word, but in the original, it's the word Logos. In the beginning was the Logos. Why does John start so differently? And why does he begin so philosophically? I want to show you that he has chosen that word carefully, deliberately, particularly. It's very purposeful. Because what John is doing is in this opening line, in the beginning was the Word, he's bringing two worldviews together. What he's going to show you is that both religious people and non-religious people are seeking something, and they're seeking the thing that is found in the Logos, the Word. He's bringing two world views together. And I'm going to explain this to you, and I'm going to make no apologies for being a little bit philosophical this morning. I make no apologies, although I'm sounding like I'm making an apology. But I make no apologies, because this is how John begins. Let me explain. Everyone tries to make sense of our lives. All thoughtful people want to make sense of the world that we live in. We want to understand. We want to understand reason. What is the reason for everything? We want to know the purpose. Why? What's it for? Why am I going through this? Why did that happen? Purpose. We want meaning. What does it all mean? Reason, purpose, meaning. Now, there are two ways you can go about trying to find reason, purpose, and meaning. There's two ways you can go about it. The first way is the non-religious route. It's called secularism. It started about 2,500 years ago. Greece. What happened was about 2,500 years ago, Greece went, and we all know how Greece is going through some tumultuous times at the moment, but about 2,500 years ago, Greece went through this period called the Golden Age of Philosophy. It lasted about 800 years. And I'm talking about the great minds, some of the greatest minds the planet has ever produced. People like Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, those are probably the three biggest minds. Here's what they tried to do. They sat down and they tried to figure out the reason, the purpose, the meaning of the universe without God, apart from God. It's not that they were atheistic. By the way, Plato firmly believed in God. Plato said it's obvious. Look at the world. It's obvious there's a God. But what Plato said is God doesn't talk to people. We don't know what he wants. We don't know what he says. We're alone in the universe. We're little specks floating around in space. So it's up to us. We'll have to come up with reason, purpose, and meaning apart from God. We'll have to figure it out for ourselves. And here's his question. What is the principle? What is the thing that holds the universe together? How do we shape society? What makes sense? And he had a word for it. And do you know what the word was? That thing that he was trying to find? The word is, and you probably guessed it, Logos. That's what he was looking for. The Logos. The thing that suddenly goes, I get it now. The idea that you can discover Logos, this thing without God, completely swamped Western culture. I'm not going to tell you how, but it happened in the 16th century, but be that as it may, our society is a secular society, especially Australia. And in our society, the idea, completely normal, accepted, is that you can make sense of life without God. You can find reason, purpose. I mean, you can find Logos without God. Your neighbor, quickly think of your neighbor. This doesn't apply if she's here at church, but pretend she's not. Your neighbor really believes that she can live a happy, fulfilled life without any reference to God. She believes that. Society doesn't need God. So if things go wrong physically with her, she goes to a health professional and he helps her. If things go wrong with her emotionally or psychologically, she goes to see a counseling professional. Or maybe she gets prescribed medication. If things go wrong in relationships, she goes to see a counselor. Or you just give up and you move on to the next relationship because maybe that'll be better. But above all else, what you do, positive Aussie spirit, is you hope for the best. You keep believing. You don't lose faith. Faith in what? Well, I don't know. Belief in what? Well, I don't know. But I just keep believing. I have hope. At school, the school teachers will teach your children that God is irrelevant. They can pursue happiness, fulfillment, without God. Respect yourself and everyone in this classroom. Be good. Achieve your potential without God. That's like extra cheese on a pizza. It's optional. Our society is trying to live without God. Have you watched Adam Goods on TV? Adam Goods, for those of you who don't know, phenomenal footy player. He's been very prominent lately in these TV ads against racism. And rightly so. Christians want to nod their heads and say, absolutely. But here's the thing. Adam Goods will stand there and he will say, racism is wrong. And if you stop for a moment and you ask why, the answer is because it is. But why? Because it is. Yes, but why? Why can't I dislike other people? Because you can't. Yes, but why? They're trying to create reason, purpose, meaning without reference to God. Listen to this. Here is secular logic for you. Listen carefully. We all descended from apes. Therefore, let us love one another. That's like 1 + 1 = 3. I agree we must love one another. I am with you. I'm a Christian. But that's not logic to me. We all descended from apes. Therefore, let us love one another. Have you watched David Attenborough? Have you seen how apes treat each other? That's not logical. I need a better reason than that. Even Plato himself saw how the non-religious pursuit of logos doesn't work. He saw it himself. He's a great man. He wrote to Socrates, his mentor, and he said, it is impossible to attain any certainty about the deepest questions of life, but we must try. And at the end of the day, and here I'll quote him, Plato says to Aristotle, take the best of human notions and let this be the raft with which you sail through life. That's Australia. Not without risk, as I admit. If you cannot find some word of God which will more surely and safely carry you. There's Plato for you. That's the non-religious way of pursuing the logos. But there's another way. There's the religious way. While the Greeks were conducting their experiment, creating the first secular society on earth, by the way, every other culture was also pursuing reason, purpose, meaning. But unlike the Greeks, they answered those questions in a religious way. They looked to the gods for those answers. The problem, of course, is that the gods don't talk. They don't tell us, except for one very ancient culture, the Jewish culture. These guys are weird. Because the Jewish people believed that their God actually spoke to them. More than that, they believed that their God's words created everything. And they so treasured those words for reason, purpose, value, meaning, that they put them in a box. And wherever they traveled, they carried those words with them, as precious, as being the secret to the universe. They called it, in their language, rhema. In Greek, what do you think it is? You've guessed. It's the logos. Now let's come back to verse 1. In the beginning was the logos. What is John doing? In a sentence of incredible brilliance, what he's doing is he's showing that those two worldviews come together. Logos, the reason, the meaning, the purpose of everything, the thing that the best
non-religious minds are looking for is found here. He's going to show us. The thing that the poets sing about. Remember, you too, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. That thing, John says, I'm going to tell you about it. But it's the thing that religious people want to understand as well. It's the word, the logos. And John says, I want to show you about it. And you've got to pause right here and say, well, Dwayne, how does John know? I mean, Plato, I'm impressed with. Who's John? I thought he was a fisherman. Should I trust a guy with fishy smells on his clothes? Well, look at verse 14. Here's why John knows. And the word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. And we've seen his glory. The reason John is rising, not because he's cleverer, is because he's an eyewitness. And the whole book that he's about to write to us is a book about what John Croton was talking about earlier, Jesus Christ. So let me come right down to it. Jesus Christ is the reason, the purpose, and the meaning of the universe. Jesus Christ is the reason, the purpose, and the meaning of you. And I want you for a moment to hold your doubts. Suspend your doubts for a moment and come see for yourself. See for yourself. Because what we're going to do this morning, we're just going to look at verse 1 to 5, is I'm going to show you three things. Here they come, about the Word. The Word is an eternal, divine person. And I'm going to show you why that means He alone has reason, purpose, and meaning. The Word created everything. So I'm going to show you why He alone has reason, purpose, and meaning. And the Word gives life to people, which is why He alone gives reason, purpose, and meaning. I'll show it to you. So first of all, the Word is an eternal, divine person. Look at verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. What's that saying? Very simply, it is saying that the Word is eternal. What it's saying is that the Word never had a beginning. It does not say the Word began in the beginning. That would make the Word not eternal. That would mean there was a time when the Word wasn't. But he's not saying that. What he's saying is, in the beginning was the Word. No matter how far back you go, here's the beginning, the Word was there. Further back, the Word was there. Further back, the Word was there. Further back, blah, 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 blah. The Word was always there. The Word is eternal. Now let's stop right there. If that is true, that makes the Word the most relevant thing in the universe. Whatever is not eternal is eternally irrelevant. Think about it. Time makes everything irrelevant. Everything over time becomes irrelevant. But the Word is eternal. Therefore, He alone is relevant. Can you all remember how clever James Bond is? Do you remember James Bond? How clever is that guy? I remember, and I'm sure you might as well. Do you remember when James Bond could talk on the phone while in his car? I mean, I was blown away by that. How did the wire keep unraveling out the back of his car? I thought it was brilliant. It's irrelevant now. You know, it's a joke. And those of you, everyone's pretending they don't remember. It's not just technology. Time makes everything irrelevant. Hitler. If I say Adolf Hitler, who gets frightened? Nobody. You all go, history. There was a time when Hitler was the most relevant person on this planet. He was the most important thing on this planet. He's irrelevant. He's gone. Do you remember your first girlfriend? Or your first boyfriend? The whole universe revolved around them. Irrelevant.
time makes everything irrelevant. That's what a midlife crisis is. A midlife crisis is that point that you come to where you suddenly realize I'm going to die. And everything I've ever done is going to be irrelevant. Everything I've ever done is going to be irrelevant. Now, after I had prepared this sermon, I came across this quote. And I have to read it to you. This is Leo Tolstoy. He's the author of War and Peace. He wrote a thing called Confession. He had a crisis at age 50. He had abandoned Christianity, had given up on faith, and he was a very successful man. Lovely children, lovely wife. He was well known. He was becoming very wealthy. And this is what he wrote. I realized I could give no rational meaning to any single action in my life. Sickness and death would come to me, that come to many people I love. Nothing will remain but stench and worms. Sooner or later, my affairs, whatever they may be, will be forgotten and I will not exist. How could I fail to see this before now? One can only live while one is intoxicated with life. As soon as one is sober, it is impossible not to see that everything in life is a mere fraud and a stupid fraud. My question, which at the age of 50 brought me to the verge of suicide, was the simplest question lying in the soul of every man. A question without and to which one cannot live. And this is the question. Is there any meaning in my life that the inevitable death waiting for me does not destroy? Time makes everything irrelevant. Are you a good person? It's irrelevant. You're going to die. Are you a bad person? It's irrelevant. You're going to die. But the Word is eternal. And therefore, the Word alone gives meaning to things. The Word is the fixed standard, the absolute, to which everything else is relative. And if you make something else the absolute, whatever it may be, it will end up bitterly disappointing. But there's more. Look at what it says. In the beginning was the Word. The Word is eternal. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, how can you have both? Think carefully. Can you see the contradiction? The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Which one is it? How can it be both? And the obvious answer, and the only answer, is that God is a complex being. There's more to God than meets the eye. There's one God. No question about that. John himself clearly taught there is only one God, but there is a plurality within that one God. The Word was with God. That means the Word is distinct from God. Not separate. He was with God. Not separate from God. But he's distinct from God. And yet at the same time, the Word was God, which means he shares the one divinity with God. Are there more than one God? No. Are there more persons to the one God? Yes. The Word is eternal, and look at the next, divine. That's what we're being told. The Word is divine. The Word is God. And yet the Word is with God. It's an eternal divine logos. But there's more, because look at verse 2. He, not it, he was in the beginning with God. What we're being told here is that the Logos, the Word, the rational principle, the reason, the purpose, the meaning of the universe, is personal. This is a staggering thought. This is what Socrates, Plato, Aristotle could never rise up to reach. That the Logos is actually a person. It's a staggering thought. It's a mind-blowing thought. If Plato was here, he'd fall off the stage. That the Word is a person. Take on board
You might be a Christian. You might have expected this, but I want you afresh to take this on board. That at the center of the universe, at the middle, at the heart of the galaxies, of all that is, stands a person. And that person is the reason, the purpose, the meaning of everything. It's a person. The most relevant thing in the universe is not matter. It's not stuff. It's not atoms and electrons and whatever else you get in those complicated things. The most important thing in the universe is a person. Persons are more than stuff. You can study stuff, but it'll never be as important as personhood. You can be an engineer. You can be a scientist. Are we any engineers? Any scientists? What you will study is what? You'll never be able to understand why without that person. So you can be a clever engineer, and you can build bridges, and you can make complicated things, and you can know the periodic table off by heart. It'll all come together in your mind. You will be brilliant, but you will not understand why without the person. You can be a doctor, a scientist of the body. Someone could come to see you. You understand their knees. You know their ears. You know their mind. You might even be a psychologist or a psychiatrist. You understand the science of the mind. But you will never understand a person without him. You will never know the why without him. Because the Logos is the reason. He's the meaning. You cannot find meaning without the Word. The Word is an eternal, divine person. But secondly, the Word, let's come up here, the Word created everything. Look at verse 3. All things were made through Him. Without Him was not anything made that was made. All things were made through Him, a person. See, which comes first? Let's play a game, the chicken or the egg. Oh, I hate that game. Let's play a different game. What came first, stuff or persons? Which one came first? Personhood or stuff? If you're sitting here this morning, and you're most welcome, if you're an atheist naturalist, you believe that stuff came first. You believe that impersonal matter gave rise to personhood. You can't prove it. It's a leap of faith, but you choose to believe that. But look at verse 3. Here's another view. All things were made through Him. What this tells us is that personhood came before stuff. Personhood was first. The Word made everything. My favorite illustration of this, and forgive me if you've heard this before, is it's like this. At the end of the day, you tiptoe into your little darling's bedroom. So there you go. I'm not talking about your wife. I'm talking about your children. Okay, so you tiptoe. You might not have a little darling like I have. You tiptoe into your child's bedroom. The end of the day, tiptoe. And obviously, everything's all over the place. And there's a Lego house built on the carpet. And there's paper aeroplanes. And there's an animal farm, and they're all put over there. And there's a doll's house. And, you know, and it's a hive of activity. A lot of stuff has happened. And there on the bed, snoring away, is the little person. Step back and ask yourself, which one made which? Is it conceivable that all that stuff conspired to create the person? Or is it more likely that the person worked on all that stuff? Wait, let's be fair. Step out the room, close the door, lock it, and leave it for 10 million years. Will all that stuff
finally become a person? Will it? Will a banana, given enough time, become a human being? Surely, universal experience is the other way around. That the person created stuff. And have a look at this. This is as old as humans have been on earth. Listen to this piece of writing. It comes from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Obviously, John has this in mind as he writes these words. This is the start of the Bible. In the beginning, God, the person, created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, there's the word, let there be light. And there was light. Look at that. The word there, this is the astonishing thing we're being told here this morning, is that that word, see that second last line, and God said, that said is a person. That's the staggering revelation we're getting this morning. The word is a person. And that word gave rise to everything. And that, I suggest to you, is the only thing that makes sense of our world and our universe. Thanks, guys. But the important thing, here's the important thing for us this morning, is that it is persons that give things value and purpose and meaning. Not the other way around. Persons give things value and meaning and purpose. Things don't give persons value, purpose, and meaning. That's why no matter how much money you earn, you will never be satisfied, because stuff can't give you value, meaning, and purpose. Have you ever been, and I must probably apologize for this, and I will afterwards, have you ever been into Alan Pollard's garage? Well, it's mind-boggling. It is mind-boggling. There is every conceivable gadget. Look, I'm not a handy guy, so I walk in there. It's like an illiterate person walking into a library. It is mind-boggling. I don't know why they're worrying with Iran. I'm pretty sure you can make a nuclear bomb right in Alan's garage. Really, I... Now, yes, I walk into that place, and it is. You should see it sometime. I can pick up any object. This here. And I can say, Alan, what's this? And I probably will with all this stuff. What's this? And here's what he'll say. Oh, I use that for, see? It's the person who gives the object purpose. I use that for, that is its purpose. That's its value. That's its meaning. It can never be the other way around. Imagine a tradie and you go to a hammer and say, what is the purpose of that person? The hammer doesn't give the tradie purpose or meaning. Now, look at verse 3 again. All things were made through him. Without him was not anything made that was made. So what am I saying? Here's what I'm saying. The word gives purpose because he made it. Because he made everything, only the word can determine purpose or value. Or meaning, or reason. If you this morning detach yourself from the word, you will be meaningless. You will be purposeless. And I'm sorry to say it, you will be valueless. Because it is the word that gives those things. There's a logic here. We're very philosophical this morning, but I'm not afraid for us to learn to think. The logic is this: if there's no person behind something, there is no reason or meaning or purpose to it. You're walking with wifey along the beach, hand in hand, and there is a stick, a branch, all gnarled and worn down, and it's drifted up on the sand. You pick it up. You don't say to wifey, what does this mean? It's like, huh? What are you talking about? Because there's no person behind it. But should you walk along the beach and there is a wood, even though it's bizarre, because you know what artists are like, but it's been carved by some artist and it's weird and I don't get it, you can still say, what does this mean? That's a rational question, because there's a person behind it. And only the carver, or what's the right word, the artist, only they'll be able to tell you what it means. They'll tell you. And it's exactly the same with the Word. The Word made you. The Word made everything. Therefore, you will never know your reason. You'll never know your purpose. You'll never know your value. You'll never know your meaning unless you come to the Word. Logically. Look at verse 3. All things were made through him. Will you put your name down there? That's you too. Without him was not anything made that has been made. Please don't think you sneaked in through the exit, the fire exit. You were made by him. Yes, look, I know there's biological processes involved. Hey, listen, I'm like Gru. I've made 3 of my own minions myself. I know the biological processes. But that still does not mean that behind it all stands the Word. Now, at this point, you might be sitting here saying, Dwayne, I'm not a philosophical guy. Your sermon is boring. Get practical. What does reason, purpose, and meaning mean for me? I'll show you. Thirdly and finally, the Word gives life. And this is very important. Look at verse 4. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Now, here's where it gets practical. Listen up. Can you live without reason, purpose, and meaning? Can you? You can try. My spaniel can. My spaniel can live without reason, purpose, and meaning. Can you? Look again at verse 4. There's something brilliant here. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. What we're being told here is that life and light go together. If you want life, real life, satisfying life, then you have to understand. You have to get light. Light is a universal symbol for understanding. And here's what we've been told. If you really want life, if you want to live life to the full, then you have to come to the Logos. You have to come to the Word to understand your reason, your purpose, your meaning. It's only that will give you true life. It's life that starts now, and it's life that goes beyond the grave. How does it work, Dwayne? Is this Gnosticism? How is it that you're saying to me, if I understand my reason, if I understand my purpose, if I have meaning in my life, I will have life? Yes, you will. How? When you come to see that your life is all about Jesus, you're fitting in with the grain of the universe. If you go against it, you're like sandpaper. You're rubbing against the grain of the universe, and you're going to wear yourself down. And there's more. Because later we're going to see that the Word came into the world to form a relationship with us. I'll give you a hint. We'll go carefully through this in the coming weeks. But have a look at verse 9. Look what we're told in verse 9. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world. That's why I don't have to worry. I'm not discussing philosophy. It is philosophical. But I don't have to argue on philosophical basis. I'm arguing on history. Because he was in the world. And the world was made through him, and the world didn't know him. He came to his own people didn't receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, all of those who came to the Logos, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, because physical things won't satisfy, but born of God. And the Word became flesh. and dwelt amongst us, and we've seen his glory. Why did the word become flesh? Because words can't die. Words can't die. And so the word became flesh in order to die. We'll study that in the weeks to come. But the word became flesh so that he could go to a cross and die in our place. The word, the Logos, took upon himself our brokenness, our sin, our hostile rebellion of God. And he died in our place. Why? So that we get the right to become children of God. That's why the Logos gives you life. You can avoid all of this if you want to. But hey, listen. Come talk to me when the pain becomes unbearable. Because it will. Have you ever had an aha moment? Have you? Have you ever had an aha moment? When you become a Christian, you have one of those moments. When you suddenly realize why I exist. You suddenly realize my reason. You think to yourself, yes, yes, I was put on the planet for this purpose. Have you ever had a moment like that? That gives you such a surge of energy and joy. And it gives you that ability to live, to really live. That's what he's saying. The word became flesh, dwelt among us. We've seen his glory. There is a dazzling joy in coming to understand who you are. And your purpose. That is what Christians experience when they come to Jesus. It's not about me. It's not about my hopes. It's not about my dreams. It's not about me trying to make sense of my life. It's not about me trying to create something that they'll remember me by. I just heard a song the other day, Avicii. You know, I've got young kids, so I know all the cool stuff. And one of the lines is, my father told me, live a life you will remember. Is that all your dad could tell you? What an idiot. Live a life you will remember. What? You won't remember anything. Christians come, we don't have those anxieties. We find it in him. Okay, Dwayne, if that's true, then why are Christians not always happy? If that's true, are you saying the person next to me who's a Christian should be filled with a surge of joy and enthusiasm? Why aren't they happy? The answer is because they forget. They keep forgetting. That's why we must come to church. That's why you must go to a growth group. To keep being reminded. Here's what happens. As a Christian, I start thinking my purpose is my children. That's a horrible mistake. You will crush your children under the weight of your expectations, and you will be disappointed. You will be when your children turn out like mine. Oh, sorry, no. When your purpose is not your children. As a Christian, you forget, my reason for work is financial security. Is that your reason for work? Financial security? Then you're going to hate your work. Or you'll get the money you want. And it'll find you bitterly unfulfilled and unsatisfied. That can never be your reason for work. Oh, the meaning of my life is comfort. As long as I'm comfortable. But comfort will never make you a better person. Comfort will never satisfy you. Ask anyone who does exercise, which is highly uncomfortable. And they will tell you they feel much better for doing exercise than just to wallow in comfort. Can't be your reason. True life is found only in understanding that Jesus Christ is your purpose, is your reason, is your meaning. Why do I work? Because of Jesus. That's how Christians think. Jesus makes my work worthwhile. How? I don't have time to tell you in this sermon. That's why you go to a growth group. To work it out. Why do I love my wife? Because of Jesus. My marriage is about Jesus. If your marriage is not about Jesus, it's going to be very hard. Why do I have sex? Do you ask yourself that question? Are you happy just to be like my spaniel? which is, yeah, that's another whole subject. I'm sorry, that popped out. But do you ask yourself, why do I have sex? Is it because it feels good? If that's the case, you're never going to be satisfied. I'm telling you right now, if you have sex because it feels good, you're on the road to dissatisfaction. You have sex because of Jesus. How? Go to your growth group and work it out. Why do I cherish my children? Because they're cute? Well, they're not going to be cute for long. I cherish my children because of Jesus. Here's a good one for you. Why am I single? You know why I'm single? I haven't met the right person yet. If that's the way you think, you're setting yourself up for failure. You're single because of Jesus. Work it out. Some of you might be sigh. Why do I even bother? Answer, Jesus. It is Christian to start understanding that the Logos, Jesus, is my reason, my purpose, my value, my meaning. If you're not afraid to ask why. Why? Because of this. Yes, but why? Because of that. Yes, but why? If you keep cutting it down, if it ends up on anything else other than Jesus, you are out of step with the universe. You've missed the Logos, and you're heading for misery. In fact, you might be sitting here and you felt it already, a little bit of it. And it's going to get worse. No amount of pleasure, no amount of kite surfing, no amount of drugs, no amount of sex, no amount of money, no amount of TV will help you to escape the inevitable pain of living away from the Word. The Word is an eternal divine person. The Word created everything. The Word gives life to people. Boil it all down, here is an invitation for you. Look at verse 5. Come to the light. Wake up. Come to the light. Look at verse 5. He, in him was life. The life was the light of men. Look at verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. This is a gigantic invitation. The light shines in the darkness. Folks, step into the light. That's what it's saying. There's a great invitation. Come to your senses. Stop trying to build your life or identity on anything else other than the Word. And if you're a Christian here this morning and you've come to Jesus, will you come back again? Because you've started making it all about you and your relationships. That's why it hurts so much. But it was never about you. It's about him. And therefore you don't have to hurt anymore. Stop trying to find reason, purpose, meaning in anything else other than in the Word. Stop kidding yourself. The light is shining. The light shines in the darkness. Stop kidding yourself that you can live without reason, purpose and meaning. I got this illustration from Tim Keller once. An experiment was done in an old age home. What's so bad about old age? My wife worked in frail care once with very old people. The huge problem with frail old people is not their physical breaking down. It's that they haven't got any purpose anymore. Do you know what it's like when you've worked your whole life and you've earned a salary and I was generous to this person and I brought up my children and I jogged a bit and lost a bit of weight and now I'm old and guess what? I've got no purpose. What value am I to society? That's the hurt of old age. And an experiment was done in an old age home. What they did was they took these old folk, plants and pets, and they said to them, will you look after this plant very important. Please don't let it die. And they gave others a pet, a bird, or I don't know. The results of the experiment were remarkable. Folk not only lived longer, but they lived better. Their entire frame of mind changed. Here's what I'm saying. You can live without reason, purpose, and meaning, but you can't live well without reason, purpose, and meaning. The invitation is there on Tuesday night. Come join me as we look again at Jesus Christ. Let me close with this last thought. Why don't you want to? Here's why. Verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and here's the problem. The darkness has not overcome it. That word overcome, very clever. It's a double meaning. It means understand the darkness. It doesn't click. I don't get it. How long is this sermon going to be? Can I go home now, please? I just don't get it. And it also means to beat it, to conquer it. Two things. And what that shows us, here's what it is. We've got a love-hate relationship with the light. We've got a love-hate relationship with the Word. The truth is, we want to know reason. I want to know that my life matters. I want to know that I've got a purpose. I want to know the meaning. I want to live. I want satisfaction. I want the Logos. I want the Word. But. At the same time, I don't want it. There's a conquering. I want to make my own meaning. I want to know what the meaning is, but actually I don't want to know. Because I want to create my own meaning. I want my own reasons. I want my own purposes. I want to reinterpret the whole universe so that I give it meaning and value and purpose. I was made for the light. And if I'm honest, I prefer darkness, because then I get to choose. And we're stuck. That's the love-hate we have with the Logos. And here's the thing, it still shines. It still begs us to come out of the darkness. The only way out of that dilemma is if the Word would be so kind. I mean, can you imagine this? That it would enter our world to come and fetch us. And we'll see as we carry on in John's Gospel. That's what the Word did. Well, there's a lot to chew on there. Let me give you a few moments to gather your thoughts. Are we taking questions? Is there time? Great. So text your questions through. Let's have a moment to gather our thoughts. Then I'll pray and I'll take a few questions.